Hello, everyone. I'm Robbie Dorman, and this is A Serial Fanaticist, the podcast for fans of everything. Welcome. Today, I am joined by Matt Hamm to discuss The Drawing of the Three by Stephen King, Book 2 of the Dark Tower series. In it, we see Roland, the last gunslinger, join together his quartet in his quest for the Dark Tower. Matt and I talk about the trio of characters, some of the problematic aspects of Odetta's character in particular, and the intersection of magic and mental health in fantasy fiction. It was fun talking with Matt, as it always is. On to the discussion! Hello, everyone. I'm here with Matt Hamm to discuss The Dark Tower 2, The Drawing of the Three. Matt, how are you?
I'm great. Yeah, it's drawing. Like you draw them with a pencil, but it's also like you draw the cards. I get it now. Yep. I see where this is going.
Stephen King is not necessarily known for deep metaphor.
Subtlety is not really his thing.
No, it's not. It's really not. This is, yeah, Matt and I are going to, we're continuing our journey into the drawing of the, into the dark, towards the Dark Tower, I guess. We're getting there just slowly and surely, just as Roland the Last Gunslinger is. We are on book two, The Drawing of the Three, which comes out 10 years after the first book.
Which is a really long time to wait for a sequel.
It is.
So this is going to be a 7-book series, and it's 10 years between books. This is not looking good. This is the George R.R. Martin version of publishing.
Wait, 3 comes out in 91, so it's only 4 years between 2 and 3. However, 5 comes out, let's see, in 97, so 6 years. And then after that, it's another 15 years until, Wolves of the Kala. No, Wolves of the Kala is 2003, so 6 more years. But then Kala, Songs of Susanna, and the Dark Tower itself is within a year of each other, so it fits and starts until we get to the last 3 books.
Yeah. I almost makes me wonder if he wrote them all like at the same time. Like, they take place all over the place with different characters. And it's just easier to write them all at once and then, you know, publish them a little bit, you know,
Those last 3, I think, were largely written all at once. But combined, those 3 last 3 books are hundreds, probably a million words altogether, I would say. Thanks. Which is all King is so prolific. A million words is not actually that much considering his body of work.
He writes books where things actually happen? Weird.
Not all the time. depends on the book.
I feel like this book in particular had a decent amount happening, although most of it was just characters going, "What? No way. Yes way. No way. Yes way."
So The Drawing of the Three is, we are kind of given a vision of this at the 10 years pass between the publishing of 1 and 2, but only 7 hours have passed between the 2 books in the universe, in the story itself. Roland basically just woke up after his palaver with his 10 year nap with the Man in Black, and he is drawn the drawing of the three. It is, he has to go get these people, and he doesn't know what it is, and we don't either. And that's literally all this book is. It is him forming his quartet.
He's getting his posse together.
Yeah,
he's a gunslinger, so yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. That is the entirety of this book, is him. And there will be others that join them as we go and depart as we go. But these three are the core of the rest of this series. This series is no longer just about Roland. The series is now about Roland and Eddie and Susanna. Now Susanna.
By the end of the book, she becomes Susanna.
Exactly. By the end of the book, she is Susanna.
Which I feel like we should get this out of the way. The way that this particular book treats mental illness, I believe dissociative identity disorder is what we would call what Susanna had. it's problematic. Let's put it that way.
I think, yeah, I mean, it's not, I don't think it's trying, I don't know if it's trying to be representative of real life, because I generally lump all the stuff that happens in this to magic.
That is very true, because for those of you who haven't read the book, basically Roland gets these people by finding doors on a beach that lead to essentially what is our world. I guess Eddie was technically in the present when the book was being written, and Susanna is in the past. So magic.
Right. And I the doors open into their heads, you know, like Roland is literally stepping inside them in a certain way. So I don't, and like literally the last door, you know, there's three doors. First door is Eddie. Second door is Susanna. Third door is the killer, the pusher, as he's called. Jack Mort is his name. And he's the reason that Jake dies in the real world and is transported into Roland's in the first book. He pushes him into the traffic. He's the reason that Susanna has the initial head trauma. And is the reason that Susanna loses her legs. And I feel like anything that happens in these books is intrinsically tied to fate and destiny. And Ka, as Roland would say.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things I was going to ask you, Robbie, is do you think that someone was trying to tell Jack the Pusher who to push and when to push them?
I mean, I feel like that's alluded to in that first book, is that the Man in Black is doing it. And I feel like
that's true. The Man in Black, but in this book, I get the feeling that the Man in Black is obviously dead at this point, or at least we're meant to think so. And that he said that he had a higher level boss.
Right. But I mean, I think that the Man in Black is still timeless to a certain extent. I think he just, he might not be like corporeal or whatever, but also there's time travel going on and into interdimensional travel. And like, it's a part of the, like, it's kind of a thing where Roland is traveling back in time to a time when, you know, he's traveling interdimensionally and through time. And, you know, the Man in Black is showing him these things. And Jake is already, you know, he stops Jake's death, which would have prevented Jake from ever coming to his world in the first place. So there's like kind of a causal loop that got disrupted here. There's a paradox that got created by him saving Jake in
alternate universe.
In
all taken care of.
Not quite. We're not done with Jake, Matt. We're not done with Jake. There'll be more Jake in the future books. Not the Jake that we knew, I think, but there will be more Jake. But I think that Odetta is a pro. She's really strange. Odetta and Detta and what Susanna is. I think Susanna is awesome.
Well, yeah, because basically the way Susanna works is you take these two characters, Odette and Detta, and you basically, they were seen as, what's a nice way to put this? Like, Odette was like the love interest for Eddie. I like to talk a decent amount about Eddie because I think his story is very fascinating. But you have Detta as basically the antagonist for most of this entire book. And then when you combine those two, they become like the ultimate badass. And that's a little strange, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird how King gets there. I think that's my biggest problem in this book, frankly. I think after this, though, you know, in the following books, Susanna is probably my favorite character. Susanna's awesome. And I kind of like, I think now in the year 2019, I think now most writers understand how to be more sensitive when you're writing about mental illness. King himself, I think, is more sensitive about it, understands it more. This is written like, you know, it was written in the 70s and 80s, which, you know, there's still stigma about mental illness now. And then that's 40 years ago almost. So I don't, you know, I it's problematic, I think you said, but it also gets us to the point where we have Susanna, who is a black woman with, you know, with a handicap, with no legs below the knees. And she ends up being like, she is a main character. She is a protagonist and she's awesome. She's great. And I think that in a interracial romance, like all those things are like, I think it's a lot of the time when you're looking at older King, you forget, like, actually he was pretty progressive in largely, you know, I think there's different things, but like most of the problems of stuff that he wrote in, at least in his older stuff, I mostly attribute it just to, it's of the era. It doesn't understand. I don't think we even had quite the understanding of multiple personality disorder. It was not called dissociative identity disorder then, or schizophrenia then. Like, it was called schizophrenia. Like, they didn't, I don't think there was, our knowledge of this stuff was as advanced. It certainly wasn't advanced in like the zeitgeist. You know, like if
in this time probably didn't know what we know now.
Yeah, exactly. So I cut him some slack with that. And I also, for it to work in my mind, I attribute it to magic. I attribute it to the Man in Black made Jack Mort the man, the thing he was, the sociopath. He found Jack Mort, I would say. I would say that this is how I make it work in my head. I would say the Man in Black found Jack Mort, found this crazy person, and gave him these targets, basically. You know, put him in position to target these specific people. And that everything that happens afterwards has a degree of magic in it. You know, there are much more ridiculous things that happen later on in this series. So this is not a bridge too far for me to say that Odetta got hit with a magic brick when she was a little girl, and that made a terrible, her the mean in her a separate person. You know, that is not a bridge too far for me. I can accept that. And
I just wanted to say, and I actually looked at it like the stuff that happens in, you know, quote unquote, our world is, you know, more realistic. Like, it doesn't involve magic. It's just once they cross over into Roland's world, that's when magic starts, you know, affecting them slightly more. Like, oh, you know, it's possible that, you know, a blow to the head could cause something like this, especially if it affected the brain. So it's like the idea that she has these two personalities is plausible, we'll say, in the real world, but when they get integrated in the end, that's the magic part where for me, because that very rarely happens. You know, it's not the kind of thing that happens in the real world.
Yeah, I think like they're all in the merging of those personalities, like because he shows her them, he lets them see each other. Like, that's magic to me. You know, that is not real science. You know, that's not that is not how mental illness works at all. And you know, he uses the door as a mirror in a sort of way, and that's magic. You know, he makes those two personalities one person with magic. You know, and magic fixes it. So that's fine to me. I don't know how I don't know Detta, the Detta herself, the evil, the antagonist, bothers me in a certain way because of the, you know, the racist patois she has.
Well, not that, not only that, it's that she acts like a bad stereotype.
Right. And I mean, it feels like, you know, I think King is, this is what I think King is going for with Detta, is that Detta knows she's doing this. Detta is like a troll, the worst troll, basically.
And everything she does is to make life harder for somebody else.
Right. And she knows that she is doing, like, she's performing. Like, I think, to me, Detta is always performing in a certain way. Like, I feel like she knows what she's doing is a stereotype, but she's doing it on purpose to frustrate these other people, to... She's putting on an act to try and hide her intelligence, which, you know, Detta is just as smart as Odetta is. They are not, you know, she's not a different, you know, she's not necessarily different. She's just mean. She's just
awful, while Odetta is kind of the opposite. She's just good, but also kind of fragile. And I think...
Well, it's like you said, that the two... Like, this basic person has been shifted into two different aspects. So, you know, Odetta got all the... She's intelligent and well-mannered, but kind of naive and weak, both physically and a little bit mentally. Whereas... Detta got all the gumption, but also all the mean-spiritedness. So Susanna is basically the person that she was going to be before Jack intervened.
Right. And so it's – I don't know. I think it's really interesting. I don't think it works. I don't know if it worked well in 1987.
Yeah.
Because I was 2 years old. I don't know if, you know, it's largely a product of – you know, it's 30 plus years later. What are we going to do? You know, it's more like it doesn't. I think you have to hand wave a lot of this stuff away for it to, you know, it doesn't matter. At a certain point, you have to look at stuff, look at art and say, it doesn't matter if the story works or if this character works, if it's so over the top offensive and problematic, it's not worth that. You know, no story is worth it necessarily. And that's, you know, but it gets a Susanna. I think if King, I think that if King was rewriting this thing today, you know, if he was starting from scratch and this never, he never wrote this, I think we would get Susanna in a different way. I think we'd
probably,
he would come up with some other way for a Susanna, for Susanna to arrive in this world. But, you know, it's fine. You know, it's fine. It ends up okay.
Yeah, because if this were to happen today, it would probably involve something more akin to magic, or, you know, something that didn't involve a mental illness kind of thing.
Right. I say it is a thing you have to, you know, when you're discussing the book, you talk about it. That's it. That's all it is.
Yeah.
You said you want to talk about Eddie.
What do you think of Eddie as a character?
I like Eddie a lot.
I do too. That's why I was a little worried that you would not like him for some strange reason, but I think he has a very interesting window on New York society in the 80s and someone with a drug problem. I have never had a substance abuse problem, but the way Eddie deals with it and thinks about it rang very true to me. You know, if someone else is going to say that's wrong, feel free to read the book and tell us why.
Matt, I'll stop you just to cut in.
Okay. Yes.
While King was writing this, he was a tremendous cokehead. So I'm
that's true.
Gonna
but I
say,
feel like heroin and cocaine are different enough. Maybe he didn't quite know.
A substance abuse problem is a substance abuse problem to a certain addiction is addiction. Regardless of what you're addicted to, certain things are harder than others. I'm sure, and heroin is one of the hardest things to be an addict to, opiates in general. But I don't, you know. King wrote a lot about a lot of addicts in the 80s and stuff because he was an addict.
Yeah, and I feel like Eddie is a very interesting character, like his concern for his brother. And one of the things I really appreciated about Eddie's story especially is how nothing ever went right for Eddie. And basically, this story is King as a D&D DM saying, all right, you have failed every check I have given you. Let's see where the story goes. Because every time they try and do something, like the closest they get is that, oh, they get some antibiotics for Roland's sickness. Like, that's the only thing that goes right. And a tuna fish sandwich, because, you know, let's all be honest, tuna fish sandwiches are fantastic. Everything else they do, like they like once things fall apart and Eddie finds out that his brother is dead and they just get into a giant shootout with all the what's the guy's name, the mob boss's name, and just things go crazy from there. I thought that was a very interesting and elegant way for that to happen and to loose Eddie of any ties he had to the real world. And even after that, when Eddie gets pulled into Roland's world, how incredibly pissed off Eddie is at Roland for, you know, making that unilateral decision without, you know, really, you know, consulting him. That felt very organic and real. He is a fully realized character, I feel like.
I mean, you can accuse King of a lot of things in his writing, but he is never afraid to hurt his characters and to inject direct conflict with them. And I think that's – I like Eddie a lot. I think Eddie is a little bit neater in this story because it's not – you know, there's not – you know, problematic racism stuff injected into his little vignette. It is it's an addiction story, which King is very familiar with, and he writes it very well. And Eddie, you know, Eddie's character is someone who needs to be saved, but doesn't want to be saved. And that's what Roland is doing, basically, you know, and even Eddie is not necessarily still comfortable with any of this, you know, and Eddie is dragged into this world and he's never going to leave. As far as he knows, there's no out of this. He is stuck in this other, this dying world with this gunslinger who is also dying from infection, from the lobsters, the lobstrosities. God.
Oh, it's so funny when you think about an antagonist for a book like this, because obviously you have Detta and you have Jack, but it feels like the real danger to them, the most constant danger, is these lobstrosities. And it's just like, wow, who would have think this whole thing could have been derailed by weird giant lobsters?
The little, and they're really unnerving. The King does a tremendous job in making them really unnerving and really sell how dangerous they are and how simple a thing they are. Like, as long as Roland has his gun and ammo, they are not a threat at all. He just blows them away and they run away. But as soon as he doesn't have a gun, as soon as he doesn't have bullets, they are incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
And
Roland, maybe you should have carried a sword or something, buddy.
I mean, even then, I don't know. They have shells. I don't know if the sword will do the job. But we start, like, Eddie's, like, literally we meet Eddie. He's on an airplane. He's smuggling drugs. And Roland is the way for him to get out of it. Balazar is the name of the kingpin.
Yeah, which is the weirdest name for a drug kingpin. I was like, are you a demon from the Bible as well?
He kind of is. I think that's I think we're supposed to, he's supposed to be mythical.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense then.
He's supposed to be, you know, he's this big kingpin in New York, and he's a myth. You know, he builds, you know, what do you call them? Out of cards, he builds,
Towers.
Towers. Yeah, it's, you know, that stuff is very, you know, when you think about, like, The Godfather, you know, you think about The Sopranos, you think about that kind of mafioso type, the kingpin type. They are mythical, so having a name like Balazar, I think, is appropriate. But Eddie's relationship with his brother is, I think, realized. I think fully realized in this. I think, and like Roland, I think, injects himself into that relationship in a very interesting way, and I think really brings out Eddie's character and how Eddie feels about his brother and how his brother has dragged Eddie into this life, and now Roland is dragging Eddie into a new life, and Roland is replacing his brother in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because Roland is basically the polar opposite of Eddie's brother. Roland is the one, like, okay, or, you know, it's probably better to say that Roland is what Eddie's brother would have been like had he never discovered drugs and had a slightly, odd enough to say this, harsher upbringing. Because Eddie and what's Eddie's brother's name?
I don't remember. Richard?
Okay, doesn't matter.
I want to say it's Richard, but I'm not sure.
I don't think that's right. They had a horrible upbringing where, you know, they had single parents. You know, they were left alone for large portions of time.
Henry.
Their sister ended up dying. It's just, it's really rough. And somehow Roland managed to, you know, beat them in the traumatic childhood just because of all the horrible trials he was forced to go through. Like, yeah, he had parents, but they weren't good parents. Not at all. And he was basically beaten as a child from day one into this mold that he had to fit. And just, it was, but yeah, basically Eddie feels like he needs someone like this to help him along. And one of the things I really hope we see is Eddie grow into a more well-rounded person now that he has an influence like Roland, who is kind of like his brother, but not quite so addicted to anything. And also the mediating influence of Susanna, who, quite frankly, Susanna, we've actually barely met at this point. At the end of book two, she's like, by the way, I'm Susanna now. Book ends. So I'm really looking forward to figuring out who she is, because I forget, have you read these books before?
Mm-hmm. Read all of them.
Okay, so you probably know more about it from the way you speak of her. I'm just like, okay, cool. This is as far as I have gotten. Like, I just started book three a couple weeks ago, and, you know, sure. I'm really looking forward to, you know, seen who Susanna is, but it looks pretty cool so far.
Susanna's great. I love Susanna. She becomes my, like I said, my favorite character, even more than Roland, even though Roland's also great. But I think, you know, Roland and Henry are very similar people. And I think Eddie even says that kind of near the end of the book. He's like, you have an addiction, you know, it's not drugs, it's the tower. You need to get there and you'll do anything for it, you know, and you know, like we said, King is not a subtle guy. He's not really interested in being carefully planning and stuff. He wants you to know, like, hey, Eddie knows that Roland is like his brother, and I think that's the interesting thing about Eddie at the end of the book, is that Eddie knows this. Eddie understood his relationship with Henry and what it was, and he did it anyway out of love. He didn't care. He understood that it was destructive towards him and his brother, and he kept going. And I think Roland understands that his chase for the tower is destructive and will ultimately maybe kill every one of these people, but he still has to do it. And Eddie is seeing that. And I think it's interesting. That is how this book ends. And Eddie seeing that, deciding to join with Roland, but, you know, he's falling in love with Susanna. And Eddie is not going to sacrifice everything for the tower like Roland will. Eddie would not. But will that change? I don't know. That's part of the fun kind of, I don't know, political kind of schism. And I mean political in that, like, they're a belief system about how Roland believes that everything is worth sacrificing for the tower, including himself. Eddie doesn't, at least not yet.
Yeah, like, I'm hoping that Eddie becomes a mediating influence on Roland, just because obviously Roland can do some horrific things in service of his goal. And honestly, we still have not figured out why that goal is worth pursuing so single-mindedly.
I mean, it's something we're going to discover. And Roland doesn't honestly necessarily know. It is a thing that we're going to a thing that King is going to be teasing out throughout the series, is how much does Roland know about the Dark Tower? And does he only know that, oh, I know that intrinsically, I know in somewhere inside of me, I know that if I get there, I can fix things. I can make this world new again. And that is that all? The only reason he is following this single-mindedly is because there's nothing else, that this world is dying, and if he doesn't do anything, it's dead. And so he's going to the Dark Tower because it has to be the answer, or because he knows it is the answer. It's all tied up in that the kind of Ahab obsession with a single thing, even though there's not really a reason for it. He's been chasing this thing for so long, there is nothing else to him. He has to do it. And to be fair, everything in this world is telling him this is his destiny. This is fate. This is Ka-Tet. This is Ka.
And it's going to be something that we get to follow along with him, even though we don't know what he knows, which is a very interesting way. I feel like my wife reads a lot of young adult books, and I read a lot of them with her. And I feel like that's one of the big things about young adult versus, you know, standard fiction, is a lot more young adult books are told from the first person or third person limited, where you get to know everything that the character knows. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of some really interesting adult fiction and science fiction, is because a lot of times you don't even get to know everything a character knows. You get to know a lot of characters and a limited subset of what each character knows, but you don't get to know everything that a character knows. And I think that that's a more adult fiction thing, because it allows you have to push into you. Wow. I don't know why that's sound on. But basically you have to piece together what the character knows from what other characters know. And that's something that it takes time to develop. And it's refreshing. I mean, like you said, Stephen King is not known for his subtlety, but the way he writes allows you to exercise that muscle fairly well and in an interesting way, and I really appreciate that.
And I think that's single-mindedness is it's a hook. You know, like, I think because Roland is such a... I honestly love Roland. He's still a monster in a lot of ways.
Well, he's a very interesting monster.
Yes. And like Eddie's, I highlighted this, Eddie's reaction. Eddie is kind of, I think Eddie is really interesting because he feels like us, honestly. He feels like a kind of, you know, not that we're heroin addicts, but he feels like an everyday normal dude. And he says, you know, he liked Roland, feared him, but liked him as well. Suspected that in time he could love him as he loved Henry. And that's kind of what that's how I feel about Roland, is that, you know, like, yeah, I'm kind of afraid of him because he's scary, but also I love him. He's great. He is so compelling. He's tough as nails. We see trauma happen to him. He loses his fingers and a toe.
Yeah, Roland is one of those people that you can be friends with, but it's never a very close friendship because you know you can never 100% rely on them to do what's best for you. It's almost like a coworker or, you know, that weird guy that you hang out with sometime and you never know where things are going to go when that person is with you because they have such a single-minded influence on everyone around them. And people, for some reason, just go along with it because they're so charismatic, but you know that you have to – you might have to be the brakes on something that goes wildly wrong.
And that's, I think, going to be, I think the general impetus of the, you know, the series is seeing these now also powerful personalities, Susanna in particular. And I think that's why I love Susanna so much as we go, is that she is the true, like, rival to Roland's cult of personality, his will. Eddie isn't that. Eddie doesn't have the same will that Roland does. Eddie gives in. Susanna doesn't. Susanna has the same will as Roland. And that's why I think, you know, Eddie is kind of an interesting influence on both of them, largely because he loves them both, and kind of, you know, and that's hinted at here, but he, you know, is growing to love both of them in this weird posse, this weird group they have, the three. And I don't know that it's Roland has none of that in the first book. He has
because he's an alien stuck in a weird world and you don't get any of that from his character.
No. And yet now he has it. He has people pushing back on him, but he also has support. You know, he has both of those things that he hasn't. We haven't seen him. We haven't seen him have friends. We haven't seen him have anyone he loves. We've seen Jake. And we saw him willingly sacrifice Jake. However, in this book, he saves Jake. He saves Jake's life.
He goes back into Jack's. I thought one of the best parts about this book was him inside of Jack and just doing all the crazy things that he knew he needed to do. And just using Jack for it. And at the end, just being like, peace, I'm out. And Jack's dead.
And I mean, there's a certain there's a certain level of kind of justice porn to that, because we get to see Jack punished for being such a bad person. But it also does a good job of illustrating Roland's resourcefulness and how he is a complete stranger to this earth, to this world. You know, he knows just only what he's learned by being in Eddie's head for a very short amount of time. And now he's able to understand, okay, what police are, where I can get these drugs, where I can get guns, and everything else works into place. He's able to enforce his will on a place that is completely strange to him. It's also nice to see, you know, this terrible sociopath, you know, get his comeuppance. And it also, I think the third thing it does is really it draws a very clear comparison to the world that Roland is from in our world, and how he is never even – he was a noble, so he had access to a better life than most, and still –
but it was still – it was so hard on him.
Yeah, still he had just – there's the complete lack of resources he was raised with, and he looks at this earth and he's like, how can they look at this? Everyone is rich. You know, you can just get anything you want at any time? And he goes to the I love him. The scenes in the gun store.
Oh yeah, where he's like, oh, I spent so long hand rolling every single bullet. All right, here's a case of 300 for $6. Just like, what?
he's kind of, it's because that's a thing he knows. He knows weapons. He knows guns. And then he goes and sees, like, oh my God, look at this. Look how many they have. Look how easy it is. Because
I think one of the things that really pushes him is he realizes that everyone here has it so easy. That's why no one is tough, because no one has had to work hard. Like, everyone is able to have an easy life doing the one thing they want to do.
Right. And I think that's him. One, I think it tells us a lot about how special guns are in this alternate world, or in Roland's world. Because one, he's the only one we've ever seen that have guns. We have yet to see.
And they're incredibly tough.
Yeah, they're old weapons. They're magic, basically, and he's magic. And now their guns are like going to Earth. Oh, they're coming commonplace. They're very simple. There's nothing. There's so many of them, and it tells us a little bit about. I think it's all kind of indirectly showing us, like, now these people are going to be in Roland's world, and Roland's world is hard. Roland's world is dying, and these people are going to have a hard time. Because they're not prepared. They have Roland, though.
And I think they have it in them. I think that's one of the reasons they're part of Roland's, quartet, is they have it in them to survive in a world like that. They just have to be, brought up to speed very, very quickly.
And I think that's why they were chosen. You know, that's why they were fated to be part of this group, is because they have that toughness inside of them. Both Susanna and Eddie, they're both made of tough stuff down deep inside. They can handle this world that has moved on. I don't know. I think
it's going to be interesting.
It's the other thing I think we're going to see as we go on. This book is very tight, meaning there's not a lot of waste in it, if any.
No, that's one of the things I really enjoy about Stephen King, at least in the books I have read, which is probably 4 or 5 now, that he doesn't waste a lot of time on random things, the character observing what the countryside is like or something like that. It seems as almost every single word is moving the plot forward, or at least expanding the characterization of somebody.
Yeah, for that, Matt, about that. It's just, I haven't read these books in a long time. I haven't read the early ones in a long time. I haven't read any of them in a long time, technically, but revisiting these, and a lot, when it feels like there's two kinds of King novels, and you never know what you're going to get. And you can look at it, you just look at the size of the book and you kind of know. But these books are relatively short, and they are punchy, and they're bullet trains. They get you to where you're going as fast as you can. They give you only the core amount of information you need. But I think it's a thing that we'll be talking about as we go, is these books get longer and longer, and it starts here. Like, this book's only a little bit longer than the first one, but book 3 is substantially longer, and book 4, and they get longer as you go. They get, like, that's like Harry Potter. But I'm really interested to see as we go how I feel about those lengths of those books, because that's, as I've gotten older and I've read more King and I've gotten a little bit more stringent on my critique of him, it's usually these things are way too long, man. You don't need to have this many words in your book to tell the same story and for it to be effective. And I'm curious, like, this is a fantasy epic, so it makes sense, but I don't know. When we get to, like, books 5, 6, and 7, Matt, you're not going to be saying those same, you're going to be singing a different song.
It's very possible. I mean, I know a lot of authors change as they age. And once we get to the sober Stephen King, you might be willing to dawdle a little more.
There's going to be a lot of stuff about sober Stephen King that we're going to talk about. I don't think it's necessarily authors changing as they age. I think it's editors do less. They get more power as they age, as they get more successful.
Yeah.
And so editors don't make them cut as much. Editors aren't as stringent on them because they know, hey, these guys established, who am I? You know, who am I to tell Stephen King not to write this book the way he wants? He's sold millions. He's sold more books than anyone. Who am I to tell him no? So I think that that's part of the problem, I think. I don't think it's necessarily, oh, he's changed. I mean, certainly you do change as you age, and you certainly do write differently as you grow older and write more. But I don't know if the length of these books, my God, we'll get to it. This book is not long at all. It's very, very, very tight. Very dense how long it is, honestly. It fits a lot in, which that's what I love. That's my favorite Stephen King novels are the ones that just get in and out, boom, hit you with everything you got, and then they're gone. You know, they don't linger.
Right.
And maybe it's more about wanting to, you know, there's not a lot of world building. You know, you mentioned, we don't even know what the Dark Tower is. We just know it's a thing. And maybe it's just Stephen King going, yeah, maybe I want to explore what this world is more as he gets older. I want to know, I want to write more about this dying world.
Because we know nothing about this world. We know the trip Roland took of the gunslinger, and in this book we get a little more about his history, and that's about it.
Yeah, we know that, like, there's, you know, there's a little tiny bit about his class. You know, they say Court's last gunslingers, the 13 survivors of a beating class that at number 56 were all dead but Roland. So, you know, oh, there were 13 gunslingers in his class. He's the only one that lived. What happened to them? Why are they all dead? No one, there's no comic books to tell us all what happened to all these people.
Yeah.
Back in 1987. This is just a bunch of walking on a beach. There's a beach with lobster monsters on it.
Yeah, it's like, what happened to this world? Was there nuclear fallout everywhere that evolved these weird creatures? I mean, it's close enough to our world that, you know, they still remember Hey Jude, but there are weird creatures we've never even heard of.
Right. Did you catch the reference to The Shining?
I did not.
I mean, he literally name drops The Shining, but Eddie does. Where was it? I have it highlighted somewhere. He was reminded again of The Shining, where he saw what the little boy was seeing as he rode his trike through the hallways of that haunted hotel.
Oh, wow. So The Shining exists in this world.
Right. I mean, it's our world. And the movie would have been out by then. Jack Nicholson. And it's not crazy to think that Eddie had seen it. But that's a King book in this book.
Whoa, weird, man.
Like I said about the length of these novels, Matt, buckle up.
turns out there's another King book inside one of the other books. It just goes on a detour of about 300 pages.
You're not necessarily wrong.
Oh, no.
You're closer to right than you think you are.
Oh, that's sad.
But it's not. I'm not going to say it's bad. I'm going to withhold judgment for it. I remember... I have a vague memory of it from reading it the first time. I'm interested and curious to see as these, because that's what this is. In addition to just a fantasy epic about Roland and these characters, it is also the linchpin for a Stephen King meta universe. You know, a lot of his books take place in this, like in Maine, and a lot of them take place, all of them kind of take place on the same time scale. Like, you're going to read books that reference Cujo and Carrie. You know, if you read a lot of Stephen King books, they're going to talk about the time that a girl blew up a prom. They're going to talk about the time that, Shawshank closing down because of corruption. They're going to talk about all those things that happened in other Stephen King stories.
But they're going to talk about them as if they happened in that world.
Right. And this is going to do it in a completely different way. And it's a thing that I don't think. I can't think of another thing that exists like this in stories, like in novels. There probably are now because there's so many books. I don't know all of them. But I mean, growing up, I never encountered anything like it. And that's a part of the charm of it was very much for me as a Stephen King fan was you're reading this. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is The Shining. He's talking about The Shining. That's a Stephen King book. And it's in this book. But he's talking about it like it's an actual thing that it's just art to him. And then as you go, you encounter more of these characters from this from our universe, technically, coming into this place. And it's really it's for a person who loves meta narrative a lot of the time. It's really interesting and strange. Nothing. It didn't exist at this time. Like authors doing this. It's like if J.R.R. Tolkien wrote another series and suddenly it was about entirely different characters. And then Frodo Baggins just shows up in the middle of it.
Oh, no, it's more like they read a book about Frodo Baggins. Like, hey, remember that time we read Lord of the Rings?
This is only the beginning, Matt. There's going to be characters from Stephen King books showing up.
Wow. All right.
Showing up.
This is going to get real interesting is what you're saying.
Yeah, though. It's going to be very fascinating. I'm going to keep an eye out for it. It's just these little, it's not very present yet. This is still this series, I think. And I think it explains a little bit of how long it is, how long it took him to write it. It's still becoming. This isn't quite what the Dark Tower series is yet, I think, in most people's minds. It's becoming what it is. It's becoming what its final form is, I guess. But it's only it's little things here when he references The Shining. When we talk about people traveling between worlds, we're kind of the tip of the iceberg. It's starting. This is only the second book. And if you look at the entire length of how many pages, how many words this thing is, this is probably only like 10% of the entire story.
So 2/7 is 10% of it. All right. That's good to know.
Something like that. It might be less considering how long those last books are. They're very long. So we'll see. But it's those little hints that make me go, ooh, get me excited because I want to experience that again. It's one of my favorite things. I don't know. I don't know if I have anything else. I think it's interesting where we're at. I'm excited to see you experience these. And frankly, despite how crazy some of this stuff is, it gets crazier. These books are insane.
Well, I can't wait because I felt like these books were really good. But if they get insane now, well, the head.
I mean, insane and like they just go to like things you're not predicting, things you're not expecting at all. And I that's kind of the charm of them also is that they just go ridiculous, crazy things and pull in more meta narrative, both in King's works and larger kind of fictional zeitgeist, all kinds of stuff. Susanna and Eddie become really great characters. I'm excited for that. Have you ever read The Stand, Matt?
I have not, no.
Or seen the miniseries?
Nope.
Okay. I don't... I hesitate to say you should read The Stand, because it's very long and way too long, frankly, as someone who's read it recently. But I will say that if you want to read The Stand, it will add a certain level of knowledge to the next few books. That's up
all
to
right.
you. You don't
if
have
I
to.
Have time, maybe
you
I'll
don't.
Do that.
You don't have to read it. Okay. I'm not saying don't. You're not required to read The Stand because The Stand is long. It's very, very long. And I'll say that on the record. And for anyone listening out there, before you continue on the rest of the series, The Stand, I think, factors in. The Stand also features the Man in Black, so there's that connection immediately. Randall Flagg is a main antagonist of that novel. But there's this, I will say you should read, Eye of the Dragon, Matt.
Eye of the Dragon. All right.
Eye of the Dragon is a standalone, mostly standalone fantasy novel by King. And it's fantastic. It's strange to me that more people don't recommend it. Like, you know, people talk about The Shining and, you know, his other like It, Dead Zone, those kind of books that are like formative for a lot of people. Eye of the Dragon is amazing. It's relatively short, and it also features Randall Flagg as the antagonist. You may notice a trend
really
here.
Likes this guy,
yeah. But Eye of the Dragon is fantastic fantasy, just a standalone fantasy novel. Even not even as a King novel. I would definitely, before anyone listening, if you're reading along with us, I would suggest definitely reading Eye of the Dragon, along with 3 and 4. We're probably going to take a little bit of a gap between this book and our next, frankly, because I'm very busy. But if you haven't read Eye of the Dragon, definitely read it. And if you haven't read The Stand, if you're a King fan, you probably read The Stand, because Stand's pretty like very iconic as well. But it's also incredibly long, something you can't just, you know, you could read Eye of the Dragon in a weekend. or in a day if you're really a fast reader. Stand, you cannot do that. But The Stand enters in heavily in the next few books. So having that knowledge contributes to it. However, I would say you don't need to read them. I think the Dark Tower works without them, but I think it's like kind of like, you know, if you're seeing Endgame and you haven't seen, you know, Ant-Man and the Wasp, it's not gonna kill you. You got the information you know, but you're missing out on little things here and there. Same kind of deal.
All right.
But Eye of the Dragon, I wholeheartedly recommend, even if you're not even reading. Eye of the Dragon is fantastic. It's one of my favorite King novels. And frankly, now that I'm thinking about it, I want to go reread it because it's great. It's very like, it's kind of, you know, fantasy political intrigue kind of story. Very Games of Thrones-y, even, you would say. I don't know, Matt. Anything else we haven't talked about?
Not of this book. Can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, our next book will be The Dark Tower 3, The Wastelands, which takes... comes out 4 years after published four years after this book, with only 5 weeks between the ending. So I'm excited. It is a lot more world building, Matt. If you have questions about this place, that the Roland's world, we're gonna get a lot of information about that.
Sweet.
Yeah. I don't really have anything else either. I think this book's great. I love The Dark Tower. I still love The Dark Tower. We'll see how I feel about it after I get through those really long, long books at the end. That's because that's where I go start going, some of this stuff, a little bit. We'll see. Matt, is there anything you'd like to plug before we go?
I would. In fact, it turns out if you like kittens, I happen to have a couple of very cute ones in my house. On Instagram and Twitter, it's Kitten Interns, KITTINTERNS. If you want to see the adventures of the Maximoff twins, they are currently there and will be for the next probably month or so while they gain weight and continue to be the floofiest things that have ever been on this planet.
They're very cute, guys. I'm not lying. I look at it. It makes me want to take them. I don't need any more cats. And I look, I'm like, oh man, those kittens.
You could use an extra cat. This one is especially very, very fast. Pietro.
I wonder why that is.
I wonder.
Mm-hmm. But Matt, thanks for joining me.
Of course. Thank you.
Thanks again to Matt for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Dorman. And my website is robbiedorman.com. You'll find links there for my other podcasts and my debut horror novel, Conquest, available now on Amazon. You can read it for free with Kindle Unlimited. The show's website is serialfanassist.com, and you can follow our Facebook page at facebook.com/serialfanassist. If you like the show, please give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. Helps me out, helps the show out, gets us more listeners. Tell your friends, all that stuff. You know the deal. I appreciate it. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.